Now, I want to talk to a lady who was born into the notorious Children of God cult. Her name is Natasha Tormer. She spent her childhood convinced that she was part of an elite children's army that would one day save the world from the Antichrist. As bizarre as that sounds, that was the mentality of this cult. Denied an education, Natasha had barely any knowledge of life outside of the various communes her family lived in, where followers followed teachings that encouraged total sexual freedom. Natasha was physically and sexually abused from a young age, but finally escaped the cult at 18 and began to piece together her life in the outside world that she knew nothing about. She's joining us now this morning to talk about her childhood and her ongoing struggle to adapt to freedom. A very good morning to you, Natasha.
Good morning, Ryan.
Sorry about that delay there. Nice to talk to you, and thanks for taking our taking part in the programme this morning.
My pleasure.
We're going to have to start at the beginning, Natasha, if you don't mind. We're talking about an organisation, if you want to call it that, called the Children of God. Could you explain to us what that was or they were?
So it started out as a sort of evangelical group in the 60s that started in the USA, and then they moved over to Europe quite quickly after they started and recruited thousands of followers across Europe, and then they sort of spread worldwide. So it was a religious movement, Christian-based, but as time went on, as, you know, the first sort of decade passed at the start of the cult, their doctrines started to steer further and further away from standard Christianity and became a lot more extreme and a lot more bizarre, so to speak.
Okay, so before we get to the extremism and the bizarre nature of it, let's talk about your involvement in it, because you were only very little when it all happened.
Yes, so I was born into the cult.
Yes.
A good, I would think, a good 10 years after it started. So my parents joined at a very young age. They were both 17 or just 18 when they joined. They met in the cult, got married, then went on to have several children, one of which was me. Mm-hmm. So I was born into the environment.
And the environment was what exactly? Where were you housed and where did you live?
Well, as the cult's doctrines became more and more bizarre, they kind of spread out worldwide and started concentrating in countries where they could operate more easily without detection. So that was mainly across South America, Africa, and Asia, which is where I was born, in Thailand. So there were quite a few big communes in Thailand and generally around Southeast Asia.
And the nature of the people who populated the cult, what sort of backgrounds would they have come from?
Absolutely diverse. I mean, we had people of every nationality imaginable. Quite a few Americans, which is probably why, you know, despite being French, you can hear my accent isn't quite French. But even from different social levels of society as well, you had, you know, former Fleet Mac guitarist Jeremy Spencer. He was in the cult. You had some very intelligent people who had done university. You had people who came from very wealthy families. So, you know, very, very diverse.
Okay, but equally you would have had former drug addicts or drug addicts or people who came from the other end of the spectrum altogether.
Absolutely. You would have had quite a high percentage was probably, you know, people from broken homes, people who had drug addictions, alcohol problems.
Okay, so a complete mixed bag of misfits and all sorts of people from all walks of life, I suppose you could call it. How many kids were in your family? How many children did your parents have?
12.
So what happened when, it sounds like an Irish family, to be honest with you. So, but what happened then, Natasha, when you were, you know, sentient as a young child, when you were hitting the kind of 7, 8, 9, and you became aware a bit more of your surroundings and the, you know, good versus evil, or you suppose you were possibly brainwashed, so you don't know the difference. But what was happening in your typical life as a young child in the cult?
So as you said, you know, as I was born into it, I knew nothing else. So there wasn't really much doubt going on in my mind because I was brainwashed from birth to believe whatever they told me. So a typical day, I mean, at that point we were living in Thailand, was these massive communes, sometimes 100, 150 people. So all the children were divided by age groups and were looked after by what we called the aunties and uncles, which were the adults in the homes. So each group sort of had a teacher, which was an auntie or uncle who used to sort of watch us all day long and usually sleep in our room at night as well. So we were never sort of without supervision. So it was very regimented. It was, you know, in many homes we wore uniforms. We were sort of single file marched from room to room as the day went on. But a regular day would basically include hours of reading the leader's publications with his doctrines, having to memorize the Bible by heart or his quotations by heart. Even the sort of so-called schooling that we did was all based around the leader's doctrine. So we can't really say it was a very educational schooling.
Who was the leader?
David Berg. So he was an American who started he came from a very evangelical family. His mother was a preacher. So he started the cult and he ran it until 1993. I believe, when he died.
Let's go back to Thailand then and the culture. Can you give me a physical description of it? What was it? Is it a compound? Was it an apartment block? Was it tents? Like, what were the conditions of your living conditions?
Definitely would be described more as a compound. So it was usually a very large property. Inevitably had to have high walls and big security gates. They didn't really like people being able to see into the property, obviously, because of the amount of people that were living there. And usually it was either one very, very large house with sort of dozens of rooms, or it would be several houses on a massive property.
When did you become aware as a young girl that there was physical interference happening, child abuse?
Well, it happened to me when I was 4. I think the issue is when you're that young, you don't really realize what happened to you until, you know, quite a while later.
Of course. And who was the perpetrator in that instance?
It was one of the uncles who was in the home. So, you know, the adults in the home used to be given their ministry, what they called it. So you would have some who were responsible for fundraising, others who were responsible for cooking. And then you had the childcare staff. And it was considered quite a, you know, lowly job. And so, you know, you used to have these people who were very resentful, who didn't have a clue about childcare, which is, I believe, is, you know, really why a lot of abuse happened. So there was a lot of harsh physical discipline, obviously sexual abuse. I mean, it was an environment where, you know, the members of the cult, the adult members of the cult, all trusted each other as, you know, brothers and sisters in Christ. So they wouldn't, you know, they had complete and utter faith that whoever was taking care of their kids was taking good care of their kids, you know, which was, you know, there was no controls. There was no one monitoring what was actually going on, which gave any closet pedophile, you know, access to children, basically.
But what I'm trying to figure out was, because I understand that the Children of God were all about free love.
Yes.
So there was that sense in the air, pervading the air anyway. So that's
definitely
one thing. But then the children is a different story, obviously, because now you're into paedophilia and the awfulness that they're in, the lies they're in. So was it that the parents of the children were saying, we trust whoever's looking after them? Or were they saying, we're turning a blind eye because everyone's doing it anyway?
I think in the majority, I mean, there were definitely some cases where the adult knew what was going on and did absolutely nothing about it, if not encouraged it. I can't say that happened in the communes I lived in. I know my parents, for one, were not aware of it until I told them at the age of 13. But yes, absolutely, the environment was highly sexualized, and the leaders did not put any boundaries in place. So it was, there weren't any clear rules as to, you know, for example, Berg put out a letter about child sex, how, you know, children should explore their sexuality. And, you know, from the time a girl starts menstruating, she's basically an adult in that way, you know, which is, can be 11, 12 years old. And there were no firm rules put in place, which allowed for this, you know, environment that was just perfect for anyone who wanted to abuse it.
So if you were growing up in this and being, I was going to say nurtured, but malnourished morally in that regard, when did you become aware, or how was it possible for you to become aware that it was wrong?
You know, they say that gut feeling in you, and that's something I always had throughout my childhood, even at a very young age. I just had that, you know, feeling in me that something was very, very wrong, that these things were, you know, particularly with the abuse, that it was, you know, it made me feel sick, basically. But it you know, the doubts didn't really start in my mind until much later when I was a teenager.
And then what?
And then, obviously, you know, rebellious years started. I started to question the doctrines of the cult and, you know, the extreme control they had over our family and the way we lived and each one of us and, you know, what we thought and how we acted every day. Mm-hmm. And then as I sort of went to 16, 17 years old, those doubts only increased until I kind of had enough in 1999 on New Year's Eve. The cult had predicted four dates that were the end of the world and the beginning of the apocalypse. New Year's Eve going into the new millennium was one of them. That was the fourth one. And when that didn't happen, I was just, okay, there's something wrong here.
you didn't believe in the tooth fairy at that point, essentially, and felt it was time to call it quits.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds very familiar to a fellow I was talking to recently called Nate Phelps from the Westboro Baptist Church, who equally was involved in what sounds like a crazy cult and got out on his 18th birthday just and thankfully is now, like yourself, a measured member of society who realises that it was all just a crazy lark for some, from in your case, Berg, who has that kind of Jim Jones factor going on.
Absolutely.
When you were in that world of the Children of God, you considered the world, outside world, you called it the system, capital T, capital S.
Mm-hmm.
What did that mean?
Well, that's what we call anyone, you know, outside. So they were part of, you know, it was kind of, they were inferior to us because we were like the chosen ones.
Yeah, and we were the systemites is what you call people like
you're
me.
Yes, you're a systemite.
Yeah, we weren't part of your world. Therefore, we were, yeah, okay. And did you look down on us?
It depended. So you had the within the systemites, you had the sheep and the goat. Don't laugh.
Go on.
The sheep were people who were receptive to Jesus and to our doctrines and our beliefs. Mm-hmm. And the goats were those who were not receptive. And, you know, so they kind of looked down on them as in they felt superior to everyone else.
Okay.
But they also divided them in those categories.
Okay, well, you're talking to a goat, Natasha. I hope you might appreciate that. But back to your world. I mean, the daily life you lived as a child was pretty horrible. Whatever about the abuse, which was just, it's too much to go into. And we know there's children on the holidays. We don't need to go on. But suffice to say, it was mm-hmm. awful. You know, you ended up in prisons singing and dancing. How did that happen?
Well, that was a means of fundraising and spreading the doctrine. So we had each home usually had a dance troupe. And at Christmas or, you know, any holiday throughout the year, we would go out sometimes in prison, sometimes in orphanages and, you know, perform a show, basically.
OK, so it's like a very dark version of Annie gone wrong. not to belittle your experience, but it just sounds horrific. Let's get to your 18th, not quite your birthday, but you were 18. And you saw yourself feeling the need to get the hell out of there. What was the key to the gate to get you out of Dodge?
Well, that was a problem. I had no clue what the world was like outside. I had no idea how to leave. It was absolutely terrifying. And I think I got quite lucky in a sense that I met this guy who was quite a bit older than me,
mm-hmm.
Who kind of helped me leave. And at least, you know, I had a place to go to and a roof over my head and, you know, food to eat, which was a good start. But yeah, it was terrifying. If I hadn't met him, it would have definitely been a lot harder.
So he helped spirit you away from Thailand, is that right?
At that point, we were in Reunion Island. So
where
is
that?
Moved a lot. It's near Mauritius. It's a
okay.
French island.
Gorgeous. Oh, well, I'm sure it's gorgeous, but I mean, not in your
yeah.
circumstances. But he managed to get you out of there and off the island and over to London.
Yes, we travelled a bit and then I ended up 2 years later, I left him and moved to London.
Okay, and that's where you've been ever since?
Yes, I've kind of gone back to Reunion Island, but I am the majority of my time has been in England.
And
yes.
Why did you go back to Reunion Island?
Well, I became very, after about 3 years living in London, I just couldn't cope. I just found it all too overwhelming trying to adapt in society.
Yeah.
I still felt like a complete misfit. I felt very suicidal. I was extremely depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was when I was starting to feel that those suicidal feelings were starting to take over. And I knew that if I didn't do something drastic, I was going to, you know, do something stupid. So I made a very quick decision and went back to Reunion Island, back to my parents' house. At that point, the group had changed a lot, so they were living alone. There was no other cult members living with us, and they were sort of considering leaving anyways. But I really needed to reconnect with them and, you know, as an adult, try and work through, you know, why they made those decisions and how it was like for them. And unfortunately, I kind of almost got pulled back into the cult after that year. And again, it was actually an Irish guy who caught my eye online. And yeah, that's when I changed my mind, decided not to go back.
Well, so I'm getting a kind of Patty Hearst feel to that strand of your story. Is that right? That you kind of needed to go back into the arms of your captors to try and thrash it out or for whatever reasons. But nevertheless, you're online. What type of a site were you on that you found an Irishman to help your release your second escape?
I was actually debating religion on the Sun website, the newspaper.
You're joking me.
No, I was having this massive debate about religion, obviously, because I have quite strong views about it now. And then there was this, this Irish guy who I started speaking to, and we fell quite in love over a few months, and I moved back to England. But unfortunately, it didn't work out.
Okay. but you're over. You managed to get over it all. I mean, you had to reverse brainwashing. You had to deal with child abuse. You had to deal with being institutionalized and everything that goes with it. And I mentioned your families, brothers, sisters. You're dealing with a cult, Children of God. The figures are horrific. 40 ex-members of that cult from your generation alone have taken their lives by suicide. And you've come out the other end. How have you done that?
It's been a very long and very difficult process. So it's been 12 years now since I've been out. And, you know, I still am working through things, but I think the majority of the work's already done. It takes perseverance, to be honest, and a kind of belief in yourself that you have the strength within you to do it. It's very easy when you leave a cult to feel completely isolated and to feel such heavy shame about your past that you feel like you have no friends and no one will ever understand what you've been through. But I think more and more, you know, there is awareness of these things and there is actually help out there now. There are people who specialize in helping ex-members.
And can I ask you what age you are now? The rude question.
30. Yep.
Gosh, you sound like a woman with more experience than you should have at your age. But I hope you're happy, are you?
I am very happy, yes.
Are you married?
I am. 3 years.
3 years, two cats and a house in Buckinghamshire. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay.
Well, how do you know?
Well, I tracked you down. But that's they're not bad statistics for somebody who had a tough old time of it. And hopefully you're on the road to a better time of your life than you had at the beginning, and that hopefully the middle and into the future are happier times for you, Natasha. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Thank you.
It's been good to talk to you. Good luck with everything.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye. Natasha Tormey there. She is a charming lady, actually. The book is called Born into the Children of God, My Life in a Religious Sex Cult and My Struggle for Survival on the Outside. It's a paperback. It'll cost you about probably under a tenner anyway. It's HarperCollins book. And for those of you who want to get their hands on that, it should be in all shops.